Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio. Why don't you ever work the way you're supposed to?
There is only one thing hockey fans should be listening to. This podcast. You're listening to the Isles Beat Podcast with your host, BD Galoff and John Jordan. Prepare for your mind to be blown.
Howdy, y'all. You're on Isles Beat. And this is BD. John Jordan is off this week and taking advantage of the All-Star break for a little respite. And I've asked Nick Giglia. That's right. I never pronounced your last name correctly.
The pronunciation is strong with this one. That is absolutely correct.
Oh, yay. Because I used to call it Giglia because, and I got into that habit. So now I want to make sure that I get it right.
I've heard worse.
So, and Nick is with me this week. We'll take a breath and kind of discuss in this All-Star break, give a little assessment. Basically, you know, 2 weeks ago with big injuries, we said that if they were able to stay at 500, it would be a big success. It would allow them to heal up and get ready for the next lap. So, you know, lo and behold, with an OT loss to Vancouver, a win versus Ottawa, and a loss versus Detroit, and a postponement versus the Flyers, you got, you know, despite two big injuries, you have 3 points in three games. And you have Hamonic back and Boychuk will two after the All-Star break. So, you know, what's next?
Oh, absolutely. And the one thing that you have to remember, too, is that one overtime loss against Vancouver, they threw everything in the kitchen sink at the net. They had 94 shot attempts. Sometimes you run into a goalie playing like a god. Now, you know, I wish Ryan Miller would have remembered to stop sucking for a game, you know, some other game, but you can't even blame the Islanders. You can't say that they played badly. You can't say that they were skating in cement or anything like that. They threw everything they had, and really 9 times out of 10, if not 99 times out of 100, you win a game like that.
Yeah, no, it's true. And not only that, even the game versus Detroit, though mistakes led to goals. I didn't think Halak looked particularly sharp despite the mistake. And we've seen Halak when he's not quite, you know, there are mistakes and Detroit took advantage. And I didn't think it was that lopsided. Obviously, you want them to win the game. But, you know, I found that the Islander fan misery doesn't even wait for two losses anymore. And I was very surprised as I can be, that after just one loss, there was seemed to be this, you know, the crying out of everything's going wrong, and people are not even waiting for two losses anymore. And you look at the Islanders in the standings. Yes, it's not the same team from the first half of last season. But it's not the, you know, it's not also the team of the second half of the season either. They seem to be somewhere in between.
Yeah, absolutely. And excuse me, sorry. As I said, I'm in the last stages of a cold here. The thing that I noticed about that game against Detroit, it was definitely frustrating to watch it. It seemed a little bit like some of the bad games last year, or even the leaner years, where it's not even that they played badly, but every mistake ended up in the back of the net. And that's not an excuse. That's not, those aren't the, some of those weren't the kind of mistakes that a playoff team should be making. But I just don't buy into this whole belief that they came, that the Red Wings came in and blew them out of the building, because that's absolutely not true.
Yeah. Hey, Nick, quick question off. Are you on a speakerphone, or I just wanted to see I'm getting some feedback.
No, I've got my wired headset in there on my laptop. I'm talking into an Apple headset.
Okay, just be careful of the speaker. I'm getting some feedback when I speak, and I think it might be coming over on your side. Just see if we can avoid it, because if it is causing some problems during the, I don't want to have people freak out. So anyway,
makes
back.
Perfect sense. Better.
I think so. So let's hopefully it is. So it's just a quick adjustment, but. Yeah, you know, it. I don't feel, look, and I went into this 2 weeks ago. I did a solo show where I kind of wanted to lay out some of the issues that I'm seeing and what's missing from last season. And that's really coming from, you know, we're not getting the same possession play. Letty and Boychuk are not playing the same level, even though they're playing well enough. It's just not the same as the first half of last season. And as we go into look at the issues from this season, I know that a lot of people are pointing to needing an elite winger for JT, but that to me is not the difference between last year and this year. The difference between last year and this year is the possession play and the ability for the forwards to get more shots. You know,
absolutely.
And Anders Lee is not playing the same level. Ryan Strome is struggling and finally getting a little bit back to. You know, there's certainly player performance issues as well, but it seems to be possession, possession, possession. And if that's the case, hoping for an elite wing for JT is just, you know, whipped cream. That doesn't solve the problem.
Yeah, it looks pretty, but it's not something that's going to really resolve things. There, the one thing I noticed most last year, and I spent some time thinking about this because I knew I was going to be coming on here, is that one thing you noticed is how good the defense was in activating and making that first pass last year. You know, you think about how there would be so many times when the other team would be getting into the Islander zone trying to set up, Dean would pick it off, there'd be a fast pass, and suddenly there'd be an odd man rush the other way, or the Islanders would be in the other zone getting some zone time, driving that possession. And you're not seeing that as much this year. I know he's everybody's favorite whipping boy. I really wish that he and I didn't share an alma mater, but I think about that third goal against the Wings on Monday, excuse me, where Brian Strait makes a blind pass up the middle that the Kaiser picks off. Then Strait doesn't activate, gives him too much space, concedes the zone entry, and then stands there while the Kaiser gets his own rebound and rifles it over Halak's shoulder before Halak knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And that's not the kind of play that they were known for last year. It was a lot of quick transitions. It was a lot of control, a lot of dictating the play a lot more than we've seen this year. And they had the same cast of characters. As a matter of fact, I know it's really frustrating to think as a fan about how they seem to have figured out the goaltending, and now it's some of the other things that might not be as good as we'd hoped.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes that doesn't solve itself until the end. You know, look at last year with the penalty kill, which sucked all season so badly that when it started to correct itself at the end of the season, no one really realized it because their average was so poor in the first part of the season that, you know, by the time the playoffs happened, their penalty kill was actually very strong and they carried that over. The penalty kill is now second. The things don't always sort themselves out right away. It matters of when it gets sorted out. And, you know, something's in terms of, especially in looking at, you know, there's a reason Boychuk was playing the second pairing. His play and is not to the same level as last year. So he's still top four, certainly, and I don't think that's, obviously there was a higher rate of play and a better play from both Letty and Boychuk making those passes and kind of dictating that, especially when they were paired together last year. That was almost like an all-star level, and that seemed to really create a lot of shot and opportunities for the forwards. And then you had Anders Lee play better. You had JT play better. They were taking more shots on goal. They were creating more high-danger scoring chances. And that still, you know, if that piece is missing, finding an elite winger doesn't get the puck in possession.
And absolutely that, not.
And that's the thing that I'm seeing, you know, very good bloggers and writers and bringing these up. And sorry, the elite winger is not the answer. The elite winger is what you want when you have everything together to get to the cup. And I don't think that's necessarily going to happen right now. What is key is, and I really don't think this is necessarily going to happen, is, and I've kind of put a little bit of a damper on trade deadline expectations. You know, Garth seems to be wanting to be aggressive. They seem to be setting up and making sure that they have the salary room this season. But the fact that they haven't been able to make anything happen speaks volumes. And the fact that the Hamonic auction basically petered out at Thanksgiving and has not picked up again gives you a very good clarity of the realistic situation. Unless somebody gets back on the phone to meet a price that Garth has set, Hamonic is not going to go. And Hamonic is not going to go for an elite forward. Hamonic is going to go because if it's in season, they need a puck possession defenseman that's in the top four. And
oh, now,
go ahead.
Sorry. Now, here's my question on that, though. Would that be something they'd still consider in the off season?
Yeah,
if we get to the end of the season and Hamonic's not traded, do we open up the possibility of trading him for a forward and using some other assets to replace him on D? Because I think
yes.
It almost seems to me like that's really the issue we're seeing here, is that if I'm a Winnipeg and I have a Trouba, or if I'm Calgary and I have a Hamilton, or et cetera, you know, you know how much I fantasize about Kevin Shattenkirk being a lum and watching him in person set up the national championship winning goal in 2009. But if I have a Trouba, if I have a Hamilton, why am I going to move them to get an equal value player? You wonder what's the advantage to the other teams in order to do that. The only advantage really is that Hamonic is cost control. And you wonder how much of that is really going to play into it, and whether this might be a situation. I mean, thankfully, Hamonic is not pulling a Jonathan Drouin, who's, of course, now walked off the team and not doing anything in terms of anything until the Lightning trade him. Thankfully, he's not doing that. But based on that and based on just common sense, I really have a feeling that Hamonic is going to be staying until the end of the year. And you start to think about who are the other people that it's going that the Islanders could theoretically target, because – you know, we were talking about this beforehand. You have potential of losing KO and Nielsen as free agents at the end of the year. Do you really want to go in, swing for the fences and trade a Dal Colle, who ideally is going to be replacing a Poso in the lineup, or a Barzal, who is ideally going to be the next Franz Nielsen, if not hopefully even better in terms of offense? Is that really something that sets up the team for long-term success?
Don't listen. We're getting a message. I think I put the time for the show too little, but I think we can just keep going. So we're going to hear that lady that no one else hears, just us as hosts, saying that our show is ending. But so ignore that. I agree in terms of that, and it seems that the likeliest scenario is that Hamonic won't be dealt till the draft now. And the reason is because the trade deadline is going to be perceived from other GMs that Garth has to do something. That is a point of disadvantage. And that is not something that Garth will work with when he has Hamonic on contract. And it's my understanding that both Hamonic and his agent understand the situation and will not be a situation like Jonathan Drouin. And we've seen it from Hamonic's own words when we had the press conference. He understands what Garth's situation is, what the team situation is, and is willing to take the time. So this is not something that will necessarily be trade deadline deal, because it's about you're slave to the market and what other prices that will be paid. And if you're not getting the value that you want, you're just going to keep, you know, you're going to stand pat. Especially when Hamonic is such an important piece to this year right now.
Absolutely. You saw what a night and day difference it's been since he came back. He's definitely been playing on another level, it seems to me, since he came back from his injury, really going into those dirty areas, jumping up into the offense. You really see what a different dimension he brings to that team. That, unfortunately, right now, a Pelech, and may he recover fully and contribute to the team next year, or a Mayfield or any of those other guys, this isn't going to bring right now, or even a Pulak.
Yeah, and
so
and
we're not going to blow a hole in the defense to trade him for an Eberle or a Nugent Hopkins or anybody like that during the season. It just makes no sense.
Exactly, especially when you know the team mission is to make sure that they are pushing into the playoffs, and using this season as a real, you know, barometer of for the coach, for the players. And right now, even though they are not playing to, you know, the way that they were the first half of last season, you still have a team that's still in the mix and being competitive and still has the type of players that you know that can, you know, hopefully turn it on. They have a lot of pieces in place, and that's what I think that I want to take advantage of the show and bring up, that, you know, the big difference maker for this last half of the season are the players that are already there. They're not going to be, you know, this idea of miracle deadline deals. It's not going to happen. I don't think that the Islanders are going to take a rental player. What they're going to be willing to do is grab a depth guy just to, you know, as maybe like Tyler Kennedy was last year. And
hopefully a little better than Kennedy, but yeah.
Yeah, well, you would hope. But it's the same philosophy. And go with what you have, because the costs inherent to that, if you look at what the deadline deals were last year, it's going to be like that this year. And getting a rental for a Dal Cole and a first is going to be a big cost that hurts them in the long run. It's not like they're winning a cup this year. Nobody thought this is our cup year. So when do you spend that cup or bust type deal? I think it's those teams that have to do it, that make those rental deals.
Absolutely. And you look at what were we talking about right before the show started about Antoine Vermette. Nice player. I wouldn't put him down. He's definitely done a lot more in the NHL than I'll ever do. But, you know, Antoine Vermette who's about a 20-30 point guy at this point in his career, gets traded for a late first round pick and Klaus Dahlbeck, who's in the top six over in Phoenix, who's challenging for a playoff spot. So if you're looking at a guy like Vermette, who's maybe a top nine center, and look at what he got, are you willing to give up, you know, Anthony Beauvillier? Are you willing to give up Josh Hosang? Are you willing to give up a Pulak or a Mayfield plus the first this year for somebody like an Antoine Vermette? And frankly, I'm wondering if those same people who are screaming for a trade wouldn't be, you know, going and stalking Garth Snow at the country club and waiting to burn his golf cart down if they did something like that.
And not just that, but look what the Islanders are able to do when they do have a first-round pick or have somebody that they are targeting in the round, or being able to move the assets for it. Assets are something that they want to, you know, utilize. You know, maybe Dal Cole gets you traded for something else, but not for some sort of rental. You want to utilize your assets to get some sort of long-term solution. And I don't think that solves, you know, there's very few players, and the only player that is available that at least is in the rumor mill, and you brought up, that is worth a hill of beans to make happen, is Shattenkirk, of an all-star caliber possession player defenseman.
I would leave a paper trail to buy a Shattenkirk jersey if they made that trade, just for the record.
To me, from my vantage point, that would be the Islanders' most ideal target, because that's a great possession player, a great defenseman, and a more of a puck possession defenseman of what the Islanders seem to be needing, as opposed to Hamonic, as good as he is really not a great puck possession guy. He's doing a lot of stuff. He's physical. He does a lot of good things. But he's really not a great possession player. And he doesn't drive the offense. And I think that if by some miracle that, you know, a player-for-player trade could happen, and it seems more likely that it'd be like a team like Tampa Bay, who has a Drouin, and the St. Louis has a need of a forward also, that that's a better trade. But that's the kind of player that the Islanders need. That's the type of player, not an elite wing, that would be a almost, you know, the answer to what ails the Islanders this season. Unfortunately, market, team needs, cap, you know, you have to trade players and salary now, not just amount of this player for this player. You're talking about long-term effects and salary. It's very difficult to pull off those type of trades now.
Yeah, absolutely. And as much as I love Shattenkirk, and as much as I think a 40 to 55 point defenseman consistently, when Hamonic's career high in points is 33 set last year, largely due to some power play time, I definitely think he's somebody that they need. And like I said, I would leave a vapor trail. You do have to think about those kind of things, because it probably wouldn't be a one-for-one, first of all, because Shattenkirk is probably the better player with more value. And yep. I know we were kind of joking about how Scott Mayfield is from St. Louis, and you might be looking at a situation where it's Hamonic, Mayfield, and maybe even a pick or something like that for Shattenkirk. You also have to look at a situation where Hamonic is signed for 4 more years at little less than $4 million cap hit. Shattenkirk's a UFA next. Is he a UFA or an RFA next summer?
He is a. That's a good question. I am not sure offhand.
We can.
Whatever.
I think. If only there was some kind of worldwide web where we would learn this information, give me a minute. But, you know, you think about it. You think about where he is. He's already making $4.25 million. So you think about that. He's already making $4.25 million. He's a UFA. He is a UFA in the summer of 2017. So he's a UFA next year. He's already making $4.25 million. Someone of his caliber, you start with the contract Boychuk got. Even though you think about how he's younger than Boychuk was when he got the contract. He's more productive than Boychuk was when he got the contract. This could be a $6.5-7 million a year player. And what does that do to the long-term cost structure if that happens?
Well, two things. One, this is why Shattenkirk's name is in the rumor mill. And I will tell you,
1,000,000%.
He will
be dealt. Can't afford him.
St. Louis cannot afford him. He has value. And, you know, they're in a spot. They're trying to extract the most value and solve a lot of different problems. Somebody like Hamonic for them would be a godsend because his contract is so friendly to their cap. That would be great, but they also have a need. They have a need in the forward position also. And, you know, I don't think the Islanders can afford to deal, let's say, you know, Strome. Because you know what other teams are going to ask. You're going to ask for the top prospect or the top player.
Or even Brock, for that matter.
Yeah, or Brock. And that becomes very – that is where things become difficult. Because then you can't just bring in a Shattenkirk and then hurt an offense that is already having some problems. So these are the difficulties of and he's just an example of the – the type of player that the Islanders need. They don't need an elite winger. They need a possession defenseman, top defenseman. That's the guy they need. That's the difference, and that is the difference between this year and last year. Not the elite winger. The elite winger will come, And whether it's in the off season or they, you know, Barzal comes up and Strom gets through and he's rising, you know, players, you know, have off season. Look at Sidney Crosby this year, even Vest or JT. Players have difficulties and they get over it and they, you know, move on. So I don't think, and this just goes back to the, you know, this elite winger solution does not help the possession game. The elite winger solution is something that you want when it's time for the cup. And we all know that this season, you know, is not that cup season. We want to see that this team can play better and more cohesively and get into the second round, something that they should have done last year.
Absolutely. Completely should have done it last year. It's definitely, this is why, I don't know, maybe this is why we're not NHL GMs, because these are the kind of things that drive you crazy and keep you up at night. But you know, it's exactly what you're saying, is that there are all these moving pieces. And, you know, you never know who's going to emerge. You think about all these guys every year who come out of nowhere. Artemi Panarin, who wasn't drafted, and suddenly jumps over here and he's playing with Patrick Kane and he looks like a world beater. Colton Parayko, who I think he came out of the University of Alaska Anchorage, if I remember properly. Nobody thought he was going to be what he is now. And suddenly he's up there. And yes, oh, I'm sorry, it's Alaska Fairbanks. Excuse me, okay. Not Alaska Anchorage. But you look at, this is a guy who had 17 games of AHL experience after three, you know, somewhat remarkable years in college, and suddenly he's coming out there looking like a really nice 6'5" defenseman who's going to be a cornerstone of the Blues. So you wonder, is there anybody in that Islander system? Is exactly as you said, is this the next year that Matt Barzal comes up and does something? Does Dal Colle stick at the end of the year? Yeah, I've definitely been watching him since his trade to Kingston, and you look at how he had, I believe it was not 8 goals in 30 games or something like that before the trade. And since the trade, yeah, 8 goals and 17 assists in 30 games in Oshawa. And since he's traded in 10 games, he's got 10 goals and 10 assists.
Yeah.
That makes me think, number one, you know, maybe he's not the guy who's going to – maybe he's not the straw that stirs the drink, as Reggie Jackson somewhere smiling and wishing I would pay him a royalty for that. And maybe he's not the straw that stirs the drink, but maybe he's the kind of guy, if you put him on the line with someone who can get him the puck in a good situation, he'll bang it in the net. Maybe he's a trigger man for a guy like a Barzal or even a JT a couple of years down the road.
Yeah,
you don't know.
Yep, exactly. And you don't know, but you know that the Islanders, despite their possession issues, and that the forwards need to shoot more and create more opportunity, you still know that you still have talent. They're still talented and young. You're not talking about vets failing. You're talking about Strom, Anders Lee. These are the key people that are not rising to the same level that they were playing last year. And you're even having two vets not playing, you know, obviously they're not playing UFA years also. You know, usually in your UFA year, you have more output. So, you know, the
you
reality
wonder if that's
is
part of what we saw with Boychuk last year.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I think, you know, Letty has always been the better player, but Boychuk was playing better last year. And Letty is a little bit inconsistent this year. When Letty plays well, they win. That's what I've noticed so far this year. So it just shows that, okay, if Boychuk is not, well, look, he's still a solid top four. The Islanders were correct, and he's playing it. So then it just shows that they need, that's the piece that they need to bring in. And if not, if there is no other piece to come in, they do have the personnel that can ramp up and get better. You know, it's still a process. It's still a journey. And everybody seems to decide at a certain juncture that the bottom is going to fall out. That's what all I've noticed. Every time that you look at the Islanders in the standings, Everybody's worried about not of where they are in the standings, but how many points out they would be to be out of the playoffs. It's like this concentration of failure and or expecting the bottom to be pulled down. And I understand it because over the years, the team goes into tailspins, and we had a success last year with a tailspin from the All-Star game out. You know, the last half of last year was terrible. They backed into the playoffs, and they squandered an opportunity, and they obviously had some injuries. But, you know, it's okay for the Islanders to be in struggle and still be competitive and be in the mix. And that seems to be this great difficulty for a lot of fans to really go with that roller coaster this year. I'm noticing a real reticence of ability to kind of, you know, they seem to go with the dips and the rise and the dips and the rise, and they seem to be a little bit dizzy. And I think that we're just waiting for the bottom to fall out. And as I see it right now at this All-Star break with, you know, Hamonic healthy, you have Boychuk that will be back. You have Halak, who's not even played maybe half the games that he did last year. Yes, there are some issues with Halak that I've heard, back issues. But overall, look at the job that Greiss has done, who's having basically a better season than Halak is right now.
Yeah. And that's definitely a guy who's emerged. You're definitely looking at it. I remember saying all throughout the Lighthouse process when we were you know, in the trenches, and we both still lived in Nassau County. Now you're out of the county and I'm out of the state, and I think we're both happier where we are. But you know, I think I kept making that comment. I know you touched on this too, BD, is that Islander fans for a really long time couldn't think about just hockey. And I think that's still kind of carried over, because first we were thinking about the Lighthouse Project. So it wasn't things like the power play and the goaltending. It was draft generic environmental impact statements and public hearings and towns of Hempstead and environmental kooks and all the rest of it. And then after the move to Brooklyn was announced, especially last year, and I also find it very funny that the Coliseum is being canonized as if, you know, it's a relative who's passed away, but that's neither here nor there. Last year, I think a lot of people were a little on edge because they were thinking it's the last year in the Coliseum, and is it going to feel like the Islanders again? And I wonder if part of the reason that this season has been such a roller coaster is because we have that very real elephant in the room of Brooklyn hanging over everything, where it's not necessarily that people are even living and dying with the team more. It's that they're trying to figure out what that fandom looks and feels like in Barclays, because we've never really gone through something like this before. And this is a theory that I just had about 10 minutes ago. Maybe it's completely off the wall, but I know I've been to about 10 games so far, maybe 8 or 9 at least. My math might be a little off, and Barclays feels like home to me now, but there are still a lot of people I know who say it doesn't. I had one very close friend who's a huge diehard Islander fan, used to be season ticket holder when they were in Nassau, and now is not, make the comment that it's a really nice hotel. Everything is first class. The amenities are great, but it's not home. And I wonder how many people share that.
Yeah, no, it's certainly a valid theory, because there's definitely baggage that's coming along this year. And I think some of it has to do with the you know, a little bit of over success in the first half of the season that gave fans an expectation of being better than what they are this year. And I think there's a little bit of back to earth, but I also don't think that they're the same team of the second half of last season that backed into the playoffs. So I think that there's a little bit of a bunch of things going on there. I think there's been a rise of expectation because we've been waiting and waiting and waiting of a rebuild taking shape, and all of a sudden having them have that success. You have that, you know, lightning striking twice and getting Letty and Boychuk, and then riding out that start of the season, that first half, like world beaters. And then, you know, the fade. And I think that this season, even in their struggles, I think that struggles have been a little bit magnified and probably a little bit overwrought, overanalyzed, over-emotionalized. And fandom is an emotional, passionate, enterprise. So I certainly understand it. But there's also that baggage. There's, whether it's the inflated expectation, thinking that, you know, there's a bunch of different things. And I think it mixes up for different people in different ways. But I definitely think there's baggage coming along with it. So, you know, at this All-Star break, you know, just like Nick and I are taking the opportunity to kind of take a breath and take a look, I think that there is issues that we're citing, just like I had brought up last season, last 2 weeks ago, with possession and the need to shoot more. And I still see that tracking better. And that's what you want to see. Yes, possession is not as good as it was last season. But possession...
Maybe the team isn't actually that good.
Possession is tracking. Possession is tracking upward. And that's what's more important. You want it to be getting better. So it really matters in what they're going to do from this All-Star break forward. I just don't want to see the fans, because I've already seen it on Twitter, having this idea of a miracle happening at the trade deadline. And all indications right now, especially since Thanksgiving's kind of tailed off on the Hamonic auction, is right now I'm not seeing it happen. I would love to be wrong and like things, you know, things can change on the dime with GM, somebody getting on the phone and making something happen. But I don't think we should wait for the miracle. I think what's more important is the process of it, possession rising, and we're seeing Strom playing better. We need to see Anders Lee playing better and scoring more. And I think that the personnel is there to have it be better. Yes, you could say that there's a coach issue. You can say a whole lot of things, and we're going to see exactly what happens. But I do think that it's taking this breath, you can be a little bit optimistic.
It's all you can be, because at this point, the team is still trending up. There were many years there where saying that they would be solidly in a playoff position at the All-Star break, a lot of fans would have killed for that. Now, part of this is definitely higher expectations, and I know definitely I've had that thought. Last year, I joke about this, and for those of you who don't know my relative age, I'm 30 years old. I'm going to be 31 in early April. And this, I first became a fan in 92, 93, and I have a scar above my right knee from when I tripped and hit the coffee table trying to tell my parents about David Volek's overtime goal. So I have been physically scarred by the Islanders in addition to mentally and emotionally and spiritually. But it's just so funny because I don't really count that season because I didn't know what was going on. I was 7, 8 years old. Last year was the first year of my Islanders fandom where the thought of them winning a cup wasn't hilariously ridiculous. Where there was an actual realistic situation that you could plot out where it could have happened. And
that's true.
And that's definitely, I think that was hard for a lot of fans to take. Believe me, it was hard for me to take at times where you start wondering, was that hot streak at the beginning of last year the lie? And is this really where they are? Or thinking about, oh man, they fixed the goaltending situation and now the scoring's out of whack, or now the D's not activating the way it used to. And what else do we need to do? And frankly, I know we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but I've seen it on Lighthouse Hockey too, and I would love your perspective on some of the change in play. We saw how the penalty kill, for example, subtly changed at the end of last year, and now we see it second in the league, and we're really seeing that bear fruit. Do you think the Islanders played a lot of run-and-gun pond hockey on some levels the beginning of last year, and they won doing it? And, you know, the black hole known as Chad Johnson had something to do with their save percentage, but I'm almost wondering if they used the All-Star break to tweak their style a little bit, and they started playing a little more conservatively, a little more low-event hockey, and trying to kind of let the play come to them instead of taking the risk and dictating the play. You know, do you think there's any merit to that theory, and do you think that it's possible that part of what we're seeing is them trying to work that possession game into a more conservative framework so as to maybe minimize the number of odd man rushes against or high danger shots or anything like that? Or do you think that's totally off base?
You know what? I'm not sure. Trying to think in from my vantage point, you know, in the start of last season, one of the feedback that I got was that, especially when they were having such a great rollout, is they weren't really playing their best hockey, and they were getting the wins. I think, especially in the beginning of October, they were getting some wins, not playing particularly well, and they were still pulling it off. Whether it was the ridiculously high shooting percentage at the time of Brock Nelson at the start of the season.
Or Brock Nelson's knee, if we want to be a little more accurate.
What was that?
Or Brock Nelson's knee, if we want to be a little more accurate, of how all those shots that hit his leg and went in.
Yeah, that's true, too. You know, his shooting percentage in the first half of last season, that I warned people, it was a ridiculously level and it wouldn't stay. And then people thought that Brock Nelson at the end of the season, or at least in the latter half of the season, he was still, you know, doing the things that he needed to do. He just wasn't getting the things correct themselves. And that was what was happening. Then I think they started to get, you know, tired or some issues towards the end of the season. That's neither here nor there. But I think that they were getting a lot in October of things. They seem to always have this mission of a type of game that they want to be playing, which is possession. The forwards are able to shoot more. With the talent that they have, they're able to get the high danger situations, and they're going to, when you throw stuff at the net, you're going to score. That seems to be the what I'm seeing. I don't know if that's necessarily being tweaked in the latter half of the season or going to be tweaked at all. I think what they want is the consistent possession game as much as possible, because I think that the players have been gotten and built and developed to work within that scope. So I don't really think that it's necessarily going to be tweaked. I think player performance has a play in it. Injuries has a play in it. There's a bunch of things that can affect it. It's when you don't – what we're seeing with the Islanders is so much of the young talent and some of those people coming up that it's starting to take shape. I just don't think that it's taken shape at to the level that on a consistent basis yet. But we're seeing glimmers of really what they want to be at. And yeah. I think that the start of last year was seeing that run at like 200% corrected itself. Or even backed in, you know, I think this season might be the correction.
I think that could be correct. Absolutely. Sorry.
Oh, no problem. Basically that I think that in this correction, there are still issues. There are still things they need to figure out. Some they can do within personnel and some they can't. And I think that, a lot of it's going to have to be the players kind of ramping it up. And if something can be done to give it a jolt, I think it will be. But, I'm starting to think that this season is the correction to the first half of last season. And we'll see how they're able to ramp up and sort some of those issues. For example, the power play still stinks. Certainly not.
Given the personnel they have, it's mind-boggling.
Well, but yet, with their problem with the possession game and some other of the issues, the fact that they're not shooting enough, it does kind of tie all together and confidence. This is still a relatively young team. And what I've noticed is when things don't work quite right, it seems to, you know, dig into the confidence, especially, you know, a young player like Ryan Stromer, Andrus Lee. You know, your two key cogs that are not playing to the level of last year. Confidence has a big part of that, too.
It absolutely does. And we still see JT look to the ceiling when somebody makes a good save on him or if he thinks he should have buried something. So it's not completely out of his system yet either. We keep forgetting. It feels like he's been around here forever. He's going to be 25. He's 25 years old at this point. So we're still not talking about somebody who's gotten that completely out of their system. You know, I think about myself at 25, and that was one of the more benign things I did when things didn't go my way.
Yeah, so, you know, and you see it with other vets. Even, you know, look at Crosby. Look at there's a bunch of different things. There's confidence. There's being in sync and not having the same things happen. The worst thing is when people start to put their own attributes. JT is frustrated and he's not focused because he's not happy about Brooklyn. They're making up their own fiction to fill in the gaps instead of the reality of young players, team that probably overshot and overachieved the first half of last season.
Oh, yeah.
And the correction. And when you add your own fiction, you're going to just – you're adding whatever you want instead of the reality. And the reality is player performance. And we'll see how that plays out. But the fact is that the Islanders are – I think they're still third unless Tampa wins, I think, today, in the Metropolitan. They're sixth in the East, and they're 10th overall in the NHL. That's not shabby. And this is not something where they're, you know, on the outside looking in. They're in the thick of it. And when we've seen them play well, they've actually been in the top six in the NHL. So as players get healthy and things start to, you know, click back into gear, you know, this is a team that should be that. This is a team that should be in the top six of the NHL.
Absolutely.
When things are working.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've definitely thought about certain things throughout this whole time about how, for example, I know I'm not one of those people who's holding out hope completely for a big deadline acquisition, but I do think about it at times, especially considering that the one thing that kind of stuck out in my mind is that this is probably the season. And I joke about this because I think there's four or five guys with a connection to BU that have a chance of going in the first round this year, in addition to Keith Tkachuk's kid who's in the OHL. But there's three recruits plus a kid who's already there who are all projected as first-round picks, and I would love the Islanders to end up with any one of them. But you also think about it, this might be the year that the first-round pick is in play because this is the year where you really look at it. They're coming off two straight seasons with two first-round picks. There's not a ton of holes in the lineup. You're really looking at not replacing a ton of people that are already in there. So you are wondering too, though, is this the year that they're going to swing for the fences? But it's got to be in a sustainable way because you think about it and you realize how you can deal with things. You know, you look at a guy like even Griffin Reinhart, who I think was traded at just the right time, traded for almost the same package that Dougie Hamilton was traded for. Yet for some reason, Reinhart still can't crack the lineup in Edmonton. I made a joke earlier today, actually, when Edmonton claimed Adam Clendenning off waivers. And it was something like, you know, I'll take people blocking Griffin Reinhart in the lineup for $1,000, Alex. And the answer is Adam Clendenning.
Yeah, you know, and the thing with Reinhardt is, and you don't know how long a player will need to be developed, and how much time. You know, there's going to be fiction that the Islanders gave up on him, and that's not true. What they did,
I think they just had a deal that was too good to pass up. Come along.
Exactly. It has to do with asset management and knowing what you have. And the fact that Boychuk being signed long-term and Letty, something that the Islanders, when they first made that deal, there was many internally that didn't think that necessarily Letty was going to re-sign. And yet he re-signed first. So things worked out really well. And when that happens, that gives you an ability to reallocate your assets. And you don't know with development time how long a player is going to take. The problem is everybody tries to make judgments and decisions before their time. And, you know, we'll see in a year or two what Reinhardt really will be and what he projects. But the asset management there was fantastic from the Islanders' point of view. And, you know, the one thing the Islanders don't have, and we'll see if it's, you know, Sorokin or any of them is that generational goaltender. That goaltender, you know, long-term, you know, wonder. That's the thing that they're missing in their system. So, you know, you wonder when they're going to, is there one within them? Or will there, you know, be one that they can finally target? That's the one thing that seems to be missing from their system.
Yeah, because Halak is a good goaltender. He is probably the best goaltender they've had since Osgood. I would even put him above in his prime DiPietro, which I know the collective amnesia is strong here, but for that couple of seasons, he was definitely on his way to becoming an elite goalie. But yeah, but that's also why, especially with the goalie prospects, you throw a lot of darts. So that's why you have a Stefan Williams. That's why you have a Sorokin. That's why you have a Soderstrom in the system. Because if you look at a lot of the elite goalies, aside from Carey Price, really none of them were taken in the top of the draft. Lundqvist was a seventh-round pick because some, you know, Ranger scout had a hunch. Ryan Miller went in the fifth round. I mean, Luongo in the fourth. Luongo and Price are basically the only ones I can think of. The goalie position is kind of voodoo. So you have to throw darts at the wall and you have to hope one of them hits. Although I will say, going back to Edmonton, I was laughing pretty hard with all those articles earlier in the year ready to anoint Anders Nielsen. And I thought, oh, just you wait, the hot takes will come. And then Anders Nielsen did Anders Nielsen things and the hot takes came rolling in. So that was a little gratifying, but still that's why, again, the goalie position is voodoo, and you have to take those darts. The one thing that really does intrigue me, looking at Sorokin especially, is not only is he pretty much tearing up the KHL at this point, he's not even 20 years old, and he's not even 20 years old. He has a .956 save percentage in the KHL with 10 shutouts. And KHL deal expires the year Halak becomes a UFA.
Yep.
So could it be a situation where they try to, you know, keep Halak on a bridge deal or do like what the Canucks did with Ryan Miller and then try to bring them along to kind of be that mentor to him? Maybe.
Yeah, it could be. You just don't know. And you never know what a KHL player will translate. And it in what is a much different league. But it definitely brings up some interesting points. And one of the things that we should talk about, because I think there's an expectation, the Islander fans are going to panic because there are going to be three UFAs. The chance of retaining even one is not particularly good. Kyle Poso.
It's going to be Franz, if anybody, if you ask me.
I think so, too. Look, the Islanders, Martin is always touted as in the hit column, but the Islanders are not going to overpay on a fourth line player. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, someone's going to give him $2.5 million a year, and I say God bless, and you know, have fun with your life. You're a great guy. You were a good asset to the team. But if someone's willing to pay him $2.5 million, I'll drive him to the airport myself.
And he's a great guy, and I cannot thank Martin enough for working on what I've been trying to help promote with Maya's Rainbow, with the tragedy that has befallen of an Islander family. And basically he and his foundation stepped up and gave a very generous donation.
I threw some money at it too. I hope that they hit their goal.
Well, they're on their way. It's last I saw it was about 67% or just a little bit above to the goal, which is, you know, fabulous from zero. So we'll keep on pounding at it, and I'll probably promote it again. During this All-Star break is kind of tough because I don't even know how many people are going to be really listening, but we'll definitely give some ample time and some opportunity. But if you want to take a look at that, go to over to Isles Beat and take a look at the post, because it's a very important and a good thing to help a fellow Islander fan and their family, basically make something good out of tragedy. But Matt Martin, you know, unless he's going to take a discount, you know, this is something for a fourth line guy. You got to make, you know, you're making a life in trying to maximize when you have this opportunity. This is true of Kyle Okposo and Franz as well. Look, Kyle Okposo, one of the issues with Kyle Okposo is if you look at the last 2 years of elite forwards or the top forwards in the league who have not just points, but who has been good for goals and first assists, what gets very overrated is the second assist. The fact is Kyle Okposo does not meet the criteria as an elite forward, but his pay will be to that elite level. That's what he wants. And someone will pay that. It's just not going to be the Islanders. But the Islanders are not in a position to trade him away when your offense is having so much trouble. There's no one to fill that spot. It's not going to happen. And the other big issue is the value of somebody who's going to collect such a big payday, who's not an elite player, is not much. You know, a first and a prospect to kill the Islanders season is not worth it.
No.
Which is the focus? Is it to get further in the playoffs, or is it to get something in panic about Kyle Okposo? Because that's what the fan stance seems to be. To me, the focus is getting to the second round of the playoffs, which means KO, and this is what happens with good teams that make the playoffs, is players are needed in position, and then they walk. That's the fact of a good team. And that's what's going to happen, and people better get into that philosophy, because I don't see anything coming back that's going to help their season. You know, a future and a prospect is not going to help the Islanders this season get to the next level. Kyle Okposo will. Franz will. And I agree with you. Franz is the best guy to perhaps come up with some sort of hometown discount that you hope. Don't know. I tried to beat the bushes to see if they're working on any kind of contract or anything like that, but nobody seems to be answering on that one. There was no comment. So
the one issue I still have with Franz, and I love Franz, and please don't take this as a slight against Franz. The one issue I would have with retaining Franz is the fact that if you do that, you're really saddling the organization with so much of the same player. Now, it's a good player to have, a smallish forward who drives possession and is pretty responsible, but you've got Grabowski, you've got Franz at that point, and then you have Barzal, you have Beauvillier, you have Hosang, you have Kohlberg, you have all these other guys that are kind of all in that same mold. And you start wondering, is the team getting a little too heavy on that end too? And maybe that's something that nobody else thinks about. but it's kind of something that's been sticking in my mind as well, trying to see maybe what, trying to read the tea leaves a little bit about what they'll do.
Yeah, you know, the position, you know, the thing is that Franz can get in market, and it depends, because you can also over estimate the market and then be caught into a situation where teams don't have the cap room to give. You know, Franz is, and his agents are going to have to really take a look to see if there's an opportunity for him to be paid as a second-line player, a top six, because the pay that the Islanders are only going to be able to give is a top nine. That's going to be the difference. And if he's willing to suck up that difference, then he can be retained. If he's not, you know, if there's an opportunity and he's willing to go elsewhere, and somebody will possibly pay, but you have to estimate, you know, there was a bunch of, you know, free agents just last summer when the cap didn't go up that high that got stuck. They did not get the deals that they wanted.
Hey, Franzen.
Yep. They were not willing to put up the money and the years. And Franz, if he overestimates, could fall into that role. It depends on the market for, you know, second line players. If he feels that he can do that somewhere else and get more money, you know, that's the question for him. The KO is just the fact that the Islanders cannot pay him like an elite forward. He's not. And I think this will be, you know, proven out. That's the bottom line. And it's unfortunate because Kyle's a great guy and he's a great player, but he's not elite.
Yeah, the lower number for the Strom extension that's going to come in, you might see him getting similar to what Brock signed for last year, maybe a little more. Mm-hmm. When we originally thought he was going to get more than Couturier got. So that's definitely something, but it keeps coming back to, and I know this is something you've hit on so many times, is that every dollar you overpay an Oposo or a Nielsen or anybody else is a dollar you can't give John Tavares in two years or 3 years?
I think it's two, but I don't know offhand.
So John Agueddon's in 2 years. Got it. Okay. But you have to think that whatever that Tavares is going to start at $11 million at that point. You know, eight years, 11 million is probably right about where that's going to come on, and you have to find that extra $5.5 million in the budget.
Yeah, well, the Islanders, their bread is buttered by JT, and that's why he's so key, and that's why you cannot make these long term commitments and put yourself in cap ceiling hell. If you want to look at a team that ended up overpaying for fourth liners, look at what the Bruins had to do and had blow up their team last year to offset the mistakes made by Chiarelli before that. You can't overpay for fourth liners. You need to draw a line somewhere. And it's unfortunate that a line has to be drawn, but that's the cap reality of the league. And, you know, you have to think of that long-term situation. And that's why you have to maximize your draft picks. That's why you have to, you know, can't just toss off money and throw it and hope that, you know, every time I keep on hearing, oh, when the new owners take over, they're going to spend money. Really? How much more money? Because there's not that much cap room. It's not reality. The reality is that the team is run like a business and they want a cap cushion so that they can do something when they need to, but also want to clear it up. And, you know, people that think that Garth Snow is going anywhere this year, no matter how the team goes, are going to be for a rude awakening. And people who believe this fantasy that George McPhee is waiting in the wings, you're going to have a rude awakening, because him and Letecki don't have much of a relationship at all. The relationship between McPhee and Snow are the both of them. He's a very close friend of Garth Snow's. He has nothing to do with
Garth's agent, right?
What? Yeah. Early on in Garth's career, he was, before George McPhee went into team management, he was Garth's agent, and they've been close friends ever since. And is my understanding is that, you know, McPhee likes to remain in the business and the taste of the business and doing stuff, and Garth is employing him to do that. Anything that connects McPhee to the new regime is fantasy, and we're gonna go through these fictional things. But the fact is that the new regime, as far as my understanding, are fully on board with the long term and the short term planning of Garth Snow.
And they're definitely engaged. I ran into John Ledecky at the game against the Jackets on the 12th. I seem to be the only one who recognized him, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah, you know, the it's not – people are trying to make their own fiction of, like that people are not – you know, Garth is against the wall, or that the new regime is going to change everything. The business of hockey is a business, and they are fully on board and highly respectful and complimentary of Garth's ability to do these long-term contracts. Take a look at the Hamonic contract as case in point, and tying up the core pieces. The new owners want to make money in the long term, and with guaranteed money coming from Barclays. And that setup and a team that is competitive and always in the mix is what they want.
Yeah, makes sense.
So, you know, there's going to be, you know, so we're going to see players walk. We'll see what they can do in the off season. But, you know, I just want to get away from this idea that the Islanders are going to just be sellers. Because a bunch of people have a bunch of baggage on them this season and can't really enjoy the season. Or take a look that the Islanders are in the playoff mix. You know, this is a team that is there to compete hell or high water. And if they fail, they fail. And the Islanders will assess. If it's the coach, then it'll be you're going to have no better barometer of where they are, player performance, coach performance, and everything else this year. This is the year. And are they capable of getting into the second round? I think they are. But, you know, some things need to get a little bit better. Right now they're kind of hit or miss.
Yeah. You feel like there's a level that they haven't hit yet, but they really need to hurry up and hit that level if it's out there.
Yeah. And that said, though they, you know, obviously don't look as good as the Caps do, they can beat any of those other teams any given night, you know, within their division. The Rangers, Tampa, all these teams that they could meet in the playoffs, they're capable of beating. They're just not better than the top ones right now. And, you know, the gravy train for Washington, you know, I call this with the New York Rangers had a very high PDO. They were having
very high
puck luck, and they ran it for a while. But the thing about it, and I said it before, and I'm going to say it again, these stats correct themselves. Things go back to average. Just like I said with Florida. Florida had a high PDO. They went on a run, and all of a sudden, you know, a little bit of the bottom was falling out a little bit. Teams correct themselves. Washington has a very high PDO, not extremely high, but it's a high PDO. Eventually that'll run out. Now they're not going to drop because all they have to do is run at 500 and they're fine. But
yeah, I think I saw a statistic that if the Islanders won 33 of their last 35 games, they'd only have a 65% chance of winning the division.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Washington's on such a tear. And that's okay. But Washington, as world beaters as they are right now, puck luck will correct itself. You know,
and you wonder if they're this year's Islanders, where they look like world beaters throughout the regular season, but it turned out they ran out of gas.
Well, the one thing that irks me to no end is acting like Washington just did this one-year correction by doing everything that the Islander fans wanted them to do this summer, when the when the Washington has toiled and toiled with first round exits for years and years and years, excuse me, as they get their players up to snuff, and not realize that it was a whole process to that, to get to that point. They tried to say that it was just like this immediate gratification. If you go out and spend, it'll, you'll suddenly be Washington. It took years to get to that level. And, you know, Washington is having, you know, it's their cup or bust time now. Just like, you know, Tampa Bay, who's going to have to blow up their cap if they don't rise up within that, in that playoffs. They're in a real bind.
Or just like the team that shall not be named with the trade for Yandel last year. I remembered a friend of mine was kind of rubbing it in my face when they made the trade for Yandel, going, oh, man, this is so great for the Rangers and all the other stuff. And you know what? At the end of the day, what I responded to him was, if the Rangers don't win the Cup this year or next year, this trade is going to look horrendous.
Oh, yeah.
And because that, because exactly what you said is that that was a go for it trade. That was a, we think this is our last piece before we win the Cup trade. And you know what? You look at their you look at their top nine, and Anthony DeClaire would look pretty good right there right now.
It's true. You know, Yandel, and it was always, you know, he always seemed a little bit one dimensional, and I think that shows. He's, you know, a piece that. And the funny thing is about trade deadline deals, and it goes to the miracle of trade deadline deals. Very rarely does a trade deadline deal mean a hill of beans to the situation or been that big difference. It's usually all the other ingrained issues or items for the team that's going to carry them through. The thing that I see that puts the Islanders in a really good situation come the playoffs, as long as is, and this is the big thing of health, is that Halak has not played as much as he did last season, and you have a great, great tandem with him and Greiss.
It's
if
true.
The Islanders can sort out their other issues, they have a very, very strong, one of the most important things in the playoffs is goaltenders.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. So you really hope that this is the year that they save it in the tank. And again, I'm not saying that this is a guaranteed cup year or anything like that, but you think about how the Kings won the cup after being the eighth and the sixth seed. So it just shows that if you have those fundamentals, you have a potential of making some noise once you actually get to the playoffs.
Yeah, and we will see. So I think we should start wrapping this up. Is there any other points or items that you wanted to hit on?
No, I don't think so. I think more than anything else, I'm hoping that all the fans are sticking with it and realizing that we've had it a lot worse, because I think that the big habit is to kind of lump the last 20 years together. And it's definitely human nature. And the other thing is, I hope that any fans listening who haven't had a chance to make it out to Barclays yet, you can definitely get a decently priced ticket on StubHub. I've done it a few times, for pretty short notice. Go and experience it for yourself. Don't sit in the partial view section. That's fine. But you know what? Go and at very least give it a shot and be open-minded, because this is home for the next 24 years.
Yep. I agree, sir. And I thank you for coming in and helping out.
Well, thanks for having me.
Oh, anytime. And, you know,